Thank you, Michel.
Hey, hello everyone. My name is Michal Pleban, and I would like to show you how to do cool things with a Commodore computer. So back when dinosaurs roamed the Earth, Commodore introduced the PET. It was one of the first home computers on the market, and it started a succession of a lot of different business computers that were especially popular in Europe. But time went by, and competition were introducing more and more powerful machines, so Commodore decided to upgrade the PET. And in 1982, they introduced the CBM2. And when you look at the hardware specification, you see that it's basically an upgraded PET. A faster processor here, more memory there, but it's basically the same architecture. But there is one little detail that stands out. It makes this machine really unique. It's the second processor interface. It allows you to attach a different CPU to the system and run applications on it. So if you want to do serious business, you can attach a Z80 and run CPM. Or maybe you want to do scientific stuff, so you can attach a 6809 and run Pascal. It's all made possible because the architecture is very flexible. So the way it works is both CPUs are connected by a message bus, so they can communicate with each other, and they share access to the main memory using an arbitrator. So normally one CPU is running an application, and the other one is either waiting or doing some housekeeping tasks, maybe checking the keyboard, maybe updating the timer. But basically, the CPUs run together at the same time. And the message passing bus allows you to use an inter-processor communication. So if you have an application running on the second CPU and you need to do some I/O, maybe load a sector from the disk, then the second CPU interrupts the first one. The first one grabs the memory access from it, loads whatever it needs to be loaded from the disk, puts it in the memory, and gives the access back. And the beauty of it is that it can work both ways. So normally, you would have an operating system running on the second CPU and call the first one for I/O. That's the standard way, we could say. But you can also do it the other way around and use an application on the main CPU and use the second one as an accelerator. That's also possible because the bus is very flexible. So if you compare it, for example, to the Acorn Tube, which is also a popular and well-known second processor interface, that one works only one way. This is much more flexible. So, given this powerful architecture, what did Commodore actually do with it? Of course, there was a Z80 card plant. We have the schematic for it, but it was never produced. But what Commodore did produce in the end was this. It's an Intel 8088 processor card that's supposed to run CPM and, of course, MS-DOS as well. So yes, you can run MS-DOS on this computer, and it looks like this. I run CheckDisk because that's about the only thing I could run on the machine. Because there's a tiny little problem with MS-DOS. Today, when we think about MS-DOS, we think about the PC, because that was the original operating system that launched with the PC, and the PC became so popular that it overwhelmed all the other personal computers except the Mac. So we say MS-DOS, we think the PC. But in the early 80s, Microsoft had a different plan for MS-DOS. They wanted it to be the operating system for all 16-bit machines, just like CPM was for 8-bit machines. So you had more than a dozen different computers on the market, and each was running its own version of MS-DOS. And the theory was that once an application was written using MS-DOS APIs, it should be able to run on all of those computers. But the thing is, the MS-DOS API is very limited. So for example, if you have a spreadsheet application, you need to be able to place a cursor on the screen and update a specific cell. Well, guess what? There's no API in MS-DOS to position a cursor on the screen. So what you had to do, you had to go through the machine's BIOS And of course, each computer had a different BIOS interface. And not to mention bitmap graphics and any other advanced features. All of them had to be accessed in a machine-specific way. So what really happened is the applications were written first and foremost for the PC, maybe for a few other architectures, but if your computer was not PC compatible, then you had very little software to run on it. And the Commodore is about as incompatible as possible with the PC, so there's nothing that you can run on it. So the big question is, can we do something about it? Can we somehow make this great machine PC compatible and run real applications on it? And the answer is, of course, we can. And the way to do it is we need three things. First of all, we need something that has the same interface as the PC BIOS, so that applications can use actual PC BIOS interrupt calls to interact with the hardware. We need video memory, because there's one thing that all PC applications do, is they write directly to the video memory instead of using the BIOS, because that's so much faster. And third, we need virtual hardware, because the PC has a lot of I/O chips that the Commodore does not. So if you want to generate sound with PC speaker, for example, there's no BIOS interface for it. You need to interface with the I/O chip. So we need to do something and make up for the fact that the Commodore is lacking all those chips. So this is what is needed to create a PC compatible BIOS. These are all the interrupts they need to be implemented to have MS-DOS boot on the machine. If you are familiar with low-level DOS programming, you will recognize what they are. They give access to the screen, to the keyboard, to the disk, some basic stuff. So the good news is that we can reuse a lot of code from existing MS-DOS 1.25. Because, for example, if you want to put a character on the screen, there's already a function in Commodore kernel that does it, and there's already an interprocessor call in the old MS-DOS that uses it, so we just need to slap a different interface on it. The bad news is that it is a lot of functions. And you need to get all of them right before anything starts to work. So if you have a few years of free time, this is a good way to spend it. The video memory is actually the easiest one of those three. So of course, the PC stores the video data at a different location than the Commodore. So what we need to do is to use a timer interrupt to copy the data from one location to the other. Of course, doing ASCII and PETSCII conversion, but it's very simple. So this way, anything that the application writes to the memory where a video memory would be on the PC will actually appear on the Commodore screen. And the third thing, we need to pretend that the computer has the same peripheral chips as the PC. So of course we could try putting all those chips inside the Commodore and basically making just another PC clone, but that's not cool. And that's another way to do it. We can use virtualization. So how do we create a virtualization platform on an Intel 88 processor from the 70s? Well, this is a virtualization platform. And the way it works we need to be able to detect when the computer is trying to perform an I/O operation and stop it. So we put a So we put a virtualization environment here, and every time when the computer tries to access the I/O, it is interrupted. The interrupt routine checks what kind of I/O access is being done, does whatever magic is necessary to emulate this I/O chip, most likely using interprocessor calls to perform the actual I/O, And then it runs back, and the application thinks that it has actually accessed an I/O chip. Then it's done. So, well, is it all enough to actually make this platform PC compatible and run those applications? I'll grab your popcorn bags and let's find out. So we are booting the computer. And we are starting to load the operating system, which seems to be FreeDOS. And once we have FreeDOS running, of course, we are starting Norton Commander. What else would be? And because we're dealing with Microsoft, of course, we start with BASIC. So this is the QBasic